We're here now with Fahim Yunus, Dr. Fahim Yunus. Dr. Fahim Yunus is Secretary of Education at the Ahmadiyya Muslim community here in Baltimore. He's a physician who works at Sinai Hospital. Wrote me an email about his thoughts about peace and Islam and asked to have a conversation. I was reading some of his writing, know about the Ahmadiyya community, Muslim community in our community here, and thought it would be interesting to, as we explore different parts of our world that we don't always know, to invite him in. And Dr. Fahim Yunus, welcome. Good to have you in the studio.
Thank you very much, Mark. It's an honor to be here.
Good to have you here.
Thank you.
So first, the your branch of Islam, Ahmadiyya, is describe a bit about what it means and how it's different. Because I know that a lot of people within the Islamic world, especially more fundamentalist folks, whether they're Sunni or Shia or where they are, look at you as heretics, as infidels.
Some of them do, yeah, exactly. And when you stand up for peace, when you stand up for separation of church and state, when you stand up for equal or maybe more rights for women, when you're completely self-funded, when you say there is no jihad of the sword, then of course you are sort of a heretic from today's definition of what we see on media. So we don't take that as an offense, because this community was formed by what we believe was a reformer, a messiah in the latter days, Mirza Ghulam Ahmad from Qadian, a small hamlet town in India, in 1889. And back then, people need to understand India was being ruled by the British. So many of the same issues were going on, where Muslim communities were saying you cannot be loyal to a non-Muslim government, that you have to wage a jihad of the sword against these British. And Mirza Ghulam Ahmad, who we believe is the Messiah, stood up and he said, no, absolutely not. As long as I get my freedom of conscience, my freedom of religion, and my basic freedoms, that I have no problem, and that this is a tenet of Islam, that you should be loyal to any government. And therefore, the whole split started. Since that time, for the past 100 years, we have gone to from one man to 200 countries and tens of millions of people belonging to Ahmadiyya Muslim community. We are the oldest Muslim community in America. And we've been right here in Baltimore for nearly 50 years. And we're very proud of that. We're very proud of the work that we are doing. And the history of almost a century, we are no post 9/11 bandwagon that has just come up with a new branding.
But what many people I've had in the show over the years, and folks, by the way, the lines are open at 410-319-8888. Feel free to join us. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. You can log on to our Facebook pages with your thoughts and comments for Dr. Yunus. Or you can tweet us at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. There are a lot of people I've had on this program over the years who are Muslim activists and scholars from various branches of Islam. Many of whom were saying that if you get to the heart of Islam, that it is fundamentally, as many religions are fundamentally, a religion of peace,
right?
Not of war.
Yep.
And that's a real contradiction for most Americans to hear.
Exactly.
We're not Muslim.
Right. And that is why I think conversations like this are important, that the word Islam in itself means peace. Itself, it means peace or submission to God's will. But I think what America is longing to hear today is more than definitions, more than words and philosophy. They want to know, is it really transcending into action? And that's where the Ahmadiyya Muslim community, I would like your listeners to know that every year for the past many years now, during the month of September, we have a nationwide campaign which is called Muslims for Life, because we always thought, how should we commemorate 9/11? Because, you know, it has been linked with the day of death and Muslims, tragically. So we wanted to control and change that narrative from this being a day of death to a day of life, where Ahmadiyya Muslim community organizes over 200 blood drives around the country and pledges to raise over 10,000 units of blood. And we've done that every year since we started it. And as a doctor, I can tell that every unit of blood can potentially save 3 lives. Mm-hmm. So we save 30,000 American lives every month of September. That is what my faith, Islam, means. So when I say Islam means peace and it means life, it's not just philosophy. There is some action behind that.
So the Ahmadiyya Islamic world, I mean, this is a world that kind of traveled to the West early.
Sure,
right?
Yeah. Exactly. And, you know, it's funny you say that, because one of the beauties of this organization, that even today, this is united at one hand. We have a hierarchical system. We're not a perfect match, but you can say a Muslim pope. We have what we call a khalifa, and he's democratically elected. And our Khalifa right now resides in London, and he was visiting Los Angeles just 2 weeks ago. I was in L.A., and he had broad coverage in Wall Street Journal, L.A. Times. So we are the first ones to come to America. We have the largest mosque in North America in Calgary. We have the largest mosque in Northern Europe. And most importantly, we are self-funded. We don't take a single
penny. What does that mean to be self-funded? What do you mean self-funded?
All the money, all the mosques, all the projects that you see under Ahmadiyya Muslim Community's banner are being funded by the members, by their own contribution. We don't take a single penny from any government. And, you know, that is at the root cause of many problems today, we believe.
I'm going to come to that question, which is what you mean by that. Well, let me ask you that now, because I'm going to come back to something
sure.
you just said. But what do you mean that's the root causes? You're saying because some of the...
See, if I'm... You're right, exactly. Because if you go to some of the poorer countries, Afghanistan, Pakistan, if I'm running a mosque, if I'm that Maulvi, the clergy, the imam, and my check is coming from Saudi Arabia or a politician, then I don't have control over my message. And I am going to say what I'm being told to say to the masses who cannot read or write. And therefore, there's a huge downstream effect of something like that. When you don't control your message, the message of Ahmadiyya Muslim Community is love for all, hatred for none. That has been our message all along. Now, to have that kind of message in today's distraught world is not easy. You know, we also have issues with civil rights sometimes, but we don't make that as a...
What do you mean you have issues with civil rights? What does
like,
that mean?
See, as a Muslim, when you look like me, and I walked into a patient's room after 9/11, and the patient just screamed at me, he said, I don't want to be seen by a terrorist. So, you know, when I'm walking down the street...
How did that make you feel?
It didn't make me feel like a terrorist. I just walked out and I said, hey, you know what? I wouldn't want to be seen by a terrorist either, but guess what? You know, I'm your doctor, and I'm here to take care of you. But that was not an easy conversation, and after all the coaxing and cajoling, he still threw me out of the room. So I think when I'm walking the street, when my wife, who wears a head cover and is a physician, when she's in the mall, people don't know we are Ahmadi Muslims. They don't know what I stand for. So I get broad brushed into that post 9/11 era that many of our Muslim friends have faced. So, but still, I believe we have more rights. I have more rights as a Muslim, as an Ahmadi Muslim member here in America than I have in many Muslim countries. I have more freedoms. When I see those little acts of prejudice, I know that the Constitution and the institutions of this country are standing by my side. And that is all I need to know, because in Pakistan, there are laws against me. If I had a conversation like this in Pakistan, I could be arrested and jailed for 3 years. So that is the perspective that we are trying to bring out, that we have a long way to go in the Muslim countries.
And the Ahmadiyya Muslims, that's the second largest population of Ahmadiyya Muslims in the world, is in Pakistan, right?
After that
India.
Is true. That is true. Yeah, maybe more in Pakistan, but it's more than 4 million. Now, talk of that, what's happening? Pakistan just went through elections, and they're hailing this new democracy. Guess what? Ahmadiyya Muslims were not allowed to vote. In order to vote, an Ahmadiyya Muslim has to self-declare himself a non-Muslim. So you first go and sign a paper.
So if you're Christian or not, or Sikh, you can vote
right.
in Pakistan
that
only
is right.
if you say, I'm not a Muslim.
Exactly right. Because, you know, before you vote, they give you a card on which there are check boxes. And you have to declare your faith in order to exercise your vote. And they call that a democracy. So when I was in the long line here in America voting last year for the presidential elections, people were like, well, weren't you just very tired? I said, no, I was ecstatic, you know, because I could vote. It's a big deal for
so
me.
Where were you? Were you born in India or Pakistan?
I was born in Pakistan.
In
I was
Pakistan.
Raised there for 25 years.
So what was it like to be for 25 years as a child, part of the Ahmadiyya religion, Muslim religion? I was almost used the word sect, but that would be deriding. It's not a sect. It's a faith path that's a part of Islam.
That is exactly right.
Right?
It's a sect within Islam.
Islam.
Yeah,
so
right.
So what was it like for you then growing up as among a people who were discriminated against, who were not considered Muslim, who were considered heretics, infidels? What was
yeah.
it like?
I would say misunderstood. You know, I always thought, boy, only if you gave me some time to talk, only if we could have a conversation and we could divvy up this time 50-50, that I could tell you that I'm not someone you believe. But there is such an embargo even on our speech in Pakistan. I can't even have a conversation. So they put a duct tape on my mouth, and they go out telling the world what I believe. So it's almost like In the 2008 elections, I remember vividly during the primaries when Mitt Romney and John McCain were arguing about something, and Mitt goes to McCain saying, how come you are an expert on my position? Let me explain what my position is. And that is what is happening to Ahmadi Muslims in Pakistan for the past 50 years, that they seem to be experts on what I believe. And growing up, I always felt, let me tell you what I truly believe in.
So two things. I mean, did you ever feel your life threatened?
No question about it. Absolutely. When the laws
are... Your family?
Absolutely. You know, one of my cousins was shot dead, Dr. Naseem Babar. He was a physicist at Qaid-e-Azam University. People were saying, well, this guy could be your next Nobel laureate. By the way, the only Nobel laureate from Pakistan in the field of physics, and he was one of the first Nobel laureates from the Muslim world, Dr. Abdus Salam, was an Ahmadi Muslim. So people were saying, here is going to be another Nobel laureate from the Ahmadiyya Muslim community. And he was my cousin, and someone, he was having dinner with his family, and 9 o'clock, there's a knock on the door. He goes out, and somebody shoots him in the chest. So this is very real. This is very close to our heart. This is happening to every other person.
And you said 50 years. Do you pinpoint something that, was this always the case since the 19th century with the Ahmadiyya Muslims, or is it something that happened kind of post-independence?
Yeah. See, intra-faith strife is a normal thing for many faiths. I think, you know, Jews have many sects, Christians have many sects.
The Jews right now are in Jerusalem are trying to keep women from being able to pray at the Wailing Wall
exactly.
And arresting women for trying to pray. So
that's right.
It happens
yeah.
every...
Exactly. So
right.
No big faith is a monolith. Similarly, right. There was an intra-faith strife. Yeah, no question about it. But it all started when General Ziaul Haq, who was a dictator, or maybe before him, Bhutto, when these people started looking at playing the Ahmadiyya card for political gains, when the religious parties will come to them and say, declare these people non-Muslim and then we are with you. Otherwise, there are going to be riots in the street. So they just caved into that pressure one after the other. And being a group that never believed in jihad or the sword, we never retaliated with force. Till this day, there has not been a single act of terror associated with an Ahmadiyya Muslim community member. So essentially, we went hunkered down. We went to prayers. You know, we said, okay, we're going to pray to our God. So the field was not level. And then from the 1970s onward, every politician who came into force in Pakistan kept on clenching that fist tighter and tighter around the Ahmadiyya Muslim community to a point where today the laws are extremely harsh.
Even though people like the Bhuttos and others were seen by some as synonymous with secularism.
That's right. Yeah, that is the irony. That is exactly the irony, that these are the people who call themselves secular. But, you know, at the end of the day, a politician is a politician. That's our lesson. That's what we've learned the hard way.
But as a man who came from Pakistan, an American citizen now, but Pakistani by birth, and you see the Americans dropping drones in Waziristan, which is where most of the Pashtuns live in northern Pakistan, and almost everybody killed in that
right.
world has been innocents, women, children.
Right,
151 children, I think, were among the dead. At least the last thing I read. I mean, how does that kind of. What are those contradictories? Does that create contradictory feelings in you? Or
What a beautiful question. It's almost like you've known me for the past 43 years when you ask that question, because it's such a lose-lose situation, Mark, that when I see those two towers coming down in 9/11, I feel like my family is being slaughtered.
And many Muslims died in those towers.
Right, over 200, some people say. And when I see those drones attacking and killing Pakistanis, I see like my family is being slaughtered.
And it could be.
It is.
And it could be.
Absolutely, that is the way. So I think there is no question about it. I'm not going to shrink from that. I think it's unjust. I think it's unfair. I think it destroys the sanctity of life. I think it destroys our constitution, what we stand for. And it gives some of the clergy in that part of the world to say, hey, look at this. You know, when they call me, they say, you're talking about justice and peace and freedom and liberty in America. Look what America is doing. And they put me in a very tight spot. And I have to tell them, look, if you want to understand America, come walk on the streets here, understand, look at the common man, and you will see the magnanimity that I talk about. But I really do not have a very good answer for that, you know, uncle of mine who calls me and he says that, you know, my business was destroyed because of this drone. And is that what you call freedom and justice?
We're going to come right back. Dr. Fahim Yunus is with us. He is a physician who works at Sinai Hospital.
Upper Chesapeake and, at Franklin Square.
You used to be at Sinai. Yeah.
No, I was never.
You were never at Sinai. Yeah, yeah. So we take that back.
But I've been there as a patient, family. I like the hospital. They provide excellent care.
You're Secretary of Education for the Ahmadiyya Muslim community in Baltimore. We're talking about Islam and the world of peace and living a peaceful life. Stay with us. We'll be right back to conclude our conversation with Dr. Yunus. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and I am here with Dr. Fahim Yunus, who is a Baltimore physician, born in Pakistan, Secretary of Education for the Ahmadiyya Muslim community in Baltimore. The lines are open at 410-319-8888 as we explore the world of Ahmadiyya Islam and also the notion of Islam and peace. 410-319-8888. And as my producer online watching here, it is reminding me that you are a clinical associate professor of medicine at the University of Maryland. Thank you, Stephanie. And we'll keep his medical thing straight now.
Sure, no problem. By the way, I'm not trying to gain more patients here. The practice is closed for new patients.
you said that the Ahmadiyya Islamic community is one where men and women have, you didn't use the word parity, I just used it, but are equal. So how is the way you approach the gender issue different? I mean, you can look at, let me leave it there.
Sure. If you look at the Ahmadiyya Muslim community, the way it's structured, we have a separate organization that is led by women, that is, again, democratically, they have their own president, they have their own hierarchy, they have their own control, they have their own budget. So they are extremely active, and sometimes I joke that I think they're more active than the men, by the way. They're awesome. They do a lot of good work. Now, the issue is when somebody looks at a woman out there with a head covering,
right,
there is an assumption, oh, she needs to be liberated, that poor thing. And I always tell them, please step up to that Muslim woman and ask her, is that her choice or is that an oppression? How does she see that? Because that's not a cultural thing. That's not something her husband or father is forcing her to do. Yes, it happens in some parts of the world, but forget about that happening in America. She's probably a doctor, a scientist, a teacher, an astronaut somewhere, and that's her freedom of religion. She's practicing her faith. So I think there's a stereotypal image out there.
There are a lot of Muslim women I've interviewed over the years who said no headscarf, and they don't.
Which is their choice.
Also a choice with Ahmadiyya?
It's a choice. Any religious tenet, at the end of the day, is a personal choice. All I'm saying is, if you say, I'm a Muslim and this is a book, this is a contract I have with God, which is called Quran, then anything the Quran says, supposedly you should be abiding by the contract. If I have a lease at my house, those are rules that I should follow. Otherwise, I can be evicted. But I think it's not a human being. It's not my job to tell someone, hey, you are in violation of that contract. That contract is between that person and God. So the problem in the Muslim world today is everybody is very happy to enforce their ideas on others. And that's where we say, no, that's not a human being's job. Let people practice the way they want. That's a contract between an individual and God, not among individuals.
So how does Islam, for you, define your worldview of how society should behave and how we should conduct ourselves in this world economically, socially,
sure,
politically?
I think there should be freedom of conscience. And by the way, when I say anything from an Islamic standpoint, people say, we're not Muslim light. Some people, I have heard Muslim speakers come out and say, oh, no, I don't believe in A, B, and C. No, I contextualize anything I say. I will substantiate from Quran because I think that is the only way to make your argument solid. There should be freedom of conscience. There should be free choice. And at the end of the day, it's up to people. It's not for human beings to police people. So I think Islam is much more aligned with freedom than with oppression. And there is data behind that. If you go back just 50 years and look at the Cold War years, 99% of the Muslim world was with the free world. They were with America. They were not with Russia. Because that is the worldview of Islam. it is much more aligned with freedom and democracy as compared to totalitarian regimes today.
But there are also the contradictions. You say, you're a group that believes in life, and some of the kind of purest activists I know are people who come out of the radical progressive Catholic
sure.
community, like Catholic Workers.
Right.
And I'm curious how that kind of does it parallel what you see in the Islamic world for Ahmadiyya Muslims, and how you look at things from world peace to war to things like drones to how you take care of the poor and the
right.
rest.
I think what has happened is because of the geopolitical situation, there has been so much war, suffering, poverty, lack of education in the Muslim world that in medical terms, if I were to put it, I would say Islam is like a peaceful body, but there is a virus in that body today. And I'm not going to go into who created that virus, how it came about. But, you know, when 90% of people in Indonesia, which is the most populated Muslim country, over 200 million people,
right.
when 90% of them believe that their version of Islam has a positive influence on politics, there goes your separation of church and state. That's the virus I'm talking about. When over 50% of people in Pakistan, that's the second most populous Muslim country, believe that anyone who commits blasphemy against the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, should be killed. Death. That is the virus I'm talking about. When 80% or more of Egyptians say that anyone who leaves Islam, apostasy, should be killed, that is the virus I'm talking about. I think we as Muslim community need to acknowledge that that virus exists. That does not make Islam bad. That does not mean that all 1.2 billion Muslims are bad. But there is an ideology that is being funded and pushed by the Saudi, Wahhabi, Salafi kind of influences. And we need to stand up against it. Otherwise, this will be self-destructive for many of us in the Muslim world.
We have to close out here, but we're looking forward to having you back. So is anybody welcome to come to a service at the Ahmadiyya Muslim
Awesome
Mosque?
Question. Absolutely. We are right now in Belvedere on Garrison. We'll be moving into the Pikesville Mosque once we have the parking lot done. Absolutely. On Fridays at 1:30, we have service every Friday. Anybody. We have an open-door policy, men, women. If you call me or send me a text beforehand, we'll make sure we'll treat you well with maybe some food and snacks. Otherwise, hey, you know, you're more than welcome to come, listen to the sermon, sit on the sides, or join us in the prayers. No restrictions. We are as open as we, and, you know, in fact, you'll be doing us a favor. Come visit us.
I mean, I think I will do that. Dr. Fahim Yunus. Good to have you here. Thank you so much. Good to meet you.
Thank you very much, Mark. It's a pleasure to be here.
A local physician, professor at the University of Maryland School of Medicine, and Secretary of Education for the Ahmadiyya Muslim community here in Baltimore. And look forward to having you on in the future if we talk about other issues affecting
sure.
Islam and the world.
Thank you very much.
Good to have you here.
Bye-bye.
Dr. Yunus has been our guest. We're taking a very brief break, just a couple of minutes. Just a couple of seconds, really. We'll be right back as we are once again joined by Edward Wyckoff Williams, talking about his latest column in The Root that has caused some controversy, and have a little bit of debate and discussion between him and Lenny McAllister, a conservative media, not scholar, but speaker and writer. We'll be right back. Don't go away.